so much paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadism.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 938 of Dread Media. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode. I'm going to tell you all about what's coming up this week right after I tell you that we're proud to be sponsored by you. More specifically, the patron Dreadites, who will get this episode this evening. Or this afternoon even. It's Wednesday as I'm recording this, 5 days before everybody else will get it. There's also perks over there, so go and check it out for as little as a dollar a month. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Go and check it out. Thank you to everybody who does. I sit here Wednesday, what is it, the 13th of August, recording what very well could be the final episode of Dread Media. Yes, I know a couple weeks ago I spilt the beans that I will no longer be weekly by the end of this summer, but currently there is a 2,000 plus hectare wildfire about 12 kilometers from my house. We are on an evacuation alert, so we may need to leave at any point. And I think I'm going to make the prediction that if my house burns down, there will never be another episode of Dread Media. So if you don't hear from me next week, I guess it's been great. We're a little stressed here. Got some go bags. I'm going to grab a guitar, one of my amps, come go time. But hey, you know what? Here's hoping that we don't have to evacuate. Here's hoping that the wind pushes it away and fire services can get it under control. So it's been a pretty crazy couple days here. That sort of began with taking in the great 9-inch nails over in Vancouver. Went and saw them with my friend Patrick. Absolutely phenomenal performance. Very happy, you know, to close out my trilogy of 9-inch nails viewings with such an incredible tight set. Good stuff. Thank you, 9-inch nails. And then, Patrick and I went and saw Weapons before I had to catch the ferry home. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about Weapons later in this episode, but first, your boy Dwayne and I are talking about an independent horror film, absurdist horror, maybe, I'm not sure. It's called Chompy and the Girls, and you can find it on Tubi. And then I'm going to come back after talking about this Tubi movie and talk a little bit about the 100% on Rotten Tomatoes horror film of the year, Weapons. I'm going to remain spoiler-free on that one as well, as much as I possibly can. So feel free. All right, and then we're going to play some tunes. Speaking of, one of those tunes is by one of my favorite local artists, the Vancouver extreme metal band fronted by Devin Townsend, Strapping Young Lad. This is Strapping Young Lad with Devour.
Oh,
you doing, Dwayne?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Are you hungry? I'm hungry.
Yeah, actually I am. I kind of feel like I'm almost this, like it did, wouldn't, I could eat, a whole person and I still would not. Yeah.
Same here. You know, we start these recordings, you know, at like 10 a.m. my time. And then, you know, the deeper we get in, you know, we start a little late today. That's my fault. The deeper we get into it, the closer we get to lunchtime. And man, boy, am I hungry. I could most definitely eat a full size human woman.
Yes. And,
and scene.
Yes. You know, we could be what are we talking about today?
Let's change the subject.
What are we talking about today? We're talking about.
We are talking about. I went on Tubi and just sort of went through like what's new or whatever. It was some tab and I'm like, okay, you know, I don't really do it very often. I'm like, but you know, let's take a look and see and, you know, find a movie I want to review with either Tom or Dwayne or just movie or TV show that I want to see that, you know, they have the weirdest shit on Tubi, right? You find like TV shows from the 90s or whatever. Or like straight up Oscar bait from like the early 2000s and stuff. There's a bunch of weird shit on Tubi. And very little would ever be considered weirder than this one. So, and of course, when you're on Tubi, you can watch, like they, in the menu screen, they'll, for a lot of movies anyway, they'll put up like a 15 second chunk of the movie. And the 15-second chunk they put up of this movie was enough to sell me on this being a review with Dwayne. So Dwayne and I are talking about the 2021 horror comedy, which, not the best comedy, I would say, but...
Yeah.
It's got a couple laughs, but I still think this is an incredibly engrossing film. It is called... Chompy and the Girls. And just to, I'll set up the premise here. There's sort of a, the movie begins with a young woman trying to commit suicide, right?
Right.
Trying to hang her. Yeah.
Yeah.
always a great opening scene.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she tries to hang herself and, it does not work. And then she decides, hey, fuck it. You know, my mom told me who my dad was and I've never met him. So how about I just try and meet my dad? So I guess they live in the same small town. So she knows who he is. He doesn't know who she is. She contacts him. He freaks out. They go and meet, in the park. And this is where that 15 seconds on Tubi comes from, because while they're meeting at the park and having a very awkward meeting, what's his name? Sam.
Yeah.
He's not handling this well, but you know, you can forgive him for, you know, finding out he has a 20-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that, that he didn't know about. So they have that going on. And at the same time, a strange man quickly walks up to a woman a little farther away from them in the park and eats her. And by eating her, I mean a giant mouth opens on his body and he swallows her whole.
Yeah.
And then he looks at Sam and Jackson, the girl's name is Jackson, and then starts walking towards them and they freak out and they split up and escape Chompy, who we learn this character is Chompy. At least that's what our characters call him. And, very quickly, it is discovered that Chompy is chasing Jackson. So Jackson gets back in touch with Sam because she needs his help. Sam is going through some marriage problems with Deborah, and she gets drawn into this, and,
oh, there's Lotus, the, I guess he's a drug dealer slash, like, I don't know, maybe not shaman, but, you know, like, I think he knows something about
like
magic.
Like, sort of like an occult expert. That's like,
yeah, I guess,
like
yeah.
The closest thing Jackson has to an occult expert is this drug dealer.
Yeah.
and then they save a little girl who is also to be a victim of Chompy and sets off in, you know, a series of wild and insane events that just seem to continue on the wild and insane story I've set up for you here.
Yeah.
Dwayne, what did you think of Chompy and the girls?
I liked it, actually.
I did too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's kind of, I'm trying to even figure out how to, how to explain it. But I think just the key thing for me was, it just has like this real pacing to it. Like it takes place over one night, basically. Mm-hmm. So just shit just keeps on happening, right? Like it's Chompy is coming and you're like, oh shit, Chompy's coming. And you know, so people are trying to constantly like either get away or escape or, you know, from Chompy. There's more developments, some kind of weird stuff happens, in terms of characters and body parts and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it just has this real, like, kind of momentum to it, you know?
But at the same time,
it also has this real, I know we maybe overuse this term, but kind of like heart to it. And then also
that's the word I was thinking of.
Yeah. And it also just, it kind of makes sense. Like when you kind of understand everything, like in terms of like the character relationships and kind of like it actually kind of means something in a way. Like
it does.
I don't know how to say this. Like, yeah. So Chompy and the girls, being relevant, I guess, to the characters and their kind of ongoing situation, I guess.
Yeah.
So, which is very
The title itself becomes.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not giving away everything here. So that's why we're maybe being a little elusive, but,
Yeah.
But I really liked it. It just has this real like energy to it. It's just, you know, I really enjoyed it. Well, particularly Sam and Jackson.
Kinetic comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly.
It never
she
stops.
Is great.
Yeah. Oh God. Is she,
well,
is
I mean,
fantastic.
He's great too, but yeah.
No,
but so
Christy St. John, you know, like in so many of these, sort of lower budget films, you know, oftentimes stuff like casting is low on the totem pole as far as, importance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we as horror fans tend to watch some movies where it's like, well, I mean, the acting was shitty, but there were a lot of, like a cool deaths and stuff like that. But
yeah, exactly.
But this is an independent film, clearly like a labor of love from the writer director. But this young lady, Christy St. John, carries this film.
Yeah. Completely.
And she's compelling. I think most of the laughs that I got were from just her sort of like offhand comments.
Right.
And I don't know. It's so weird. Like that moment where she's like smoking two cigarettes.
Right.
Like, what a weird choice. What a weird choice. And then she's like upset that hanging herself didn't work. So she's trying to fix her ceiling fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Like so weird, but she is just, an absolute delight. She definitely carries the film. Sam, that is Steve Marvel. Steve Marvel is that guy's
name.
Yeah. Crazy. He's great too. His job is to be the straight man. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
he's very understated. Yeah, straight man.
Yeah.
And reasonably so too. When you consider, like, I'm pretty sure it's even maybe it's 2 days, but it's like a very, very short time frame, right?
You gotta imagine
what is going on here?
They meet at the park, like early evening.
Yeah.
Right. And then the movie, I think, sort of goes through the night into the day, into the next evening. But it's like a 24-hour period. And again, this is like a 90, what is this? Yeah, 89-minute movie. Like, and it moves at a clip, dude. And I think a lot of that is on the shoulders of Christy St. John. She carries this movie and gives it, I think, a lot of that kinetic energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
This reads very much like a bizarro horror novel.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like the closest thing, not that it's like it really in almost any way, but the closest thing I can think of is like John Dies at the End or something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that was a while ago we saw that, but yeah.
Like almost like weird for the sake of weird vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
eventually this movie creates its own mythology.
Yeah, exactly. Like it does kind of create its own. Yeah, mythology, its own kind of like logic or its own sort of internal logic or it's like not all just for the sake of being strange. Well, not exactly. Like it's you know what I mean. Anyway.
Speaking of internal logic, at one point Chompy speaks. And and Chompy is voiced by Udo Kier.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. I was wondering about that when I saw it in the opening credits, and I was like, what does that mean? Like, because I can't remember how they credit Udo Kier, but it's like...
Is it Udo Kier as Chompy?
No, it's something else. It's something like a message from Udo Kier or something like that. Like, it's not quite directly...
Warning or something?
Or something, yeah, something like that.
Hold on, there's got to be a strange credits thing in...
Yeah.
Oh, I guess they didn't do that. Yeah, often, if there's something weird in the credits, usually... IMDb points it out, but I guess this is not a well-seen movie, and that's maybe part of our job here. It's on Tubi. Highly recommend you guys check this out, because this was, for me, like pure entertainment.
Yeah, I'd not even heard of this. When I just heard the title, I thought, is this like maybe like a trauma movie or something? Again, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but...
No, you don't know going in.
Yeah. And I did actually see, because I was like, you know, whatever, getting to the thing on Tubi, and I actually did watch the little 15-second thing, like just by chance, like I was getting a cup of coffee ready or something. So normally I don't even necessarily even watch that much of a preview, but I just had to see that. And I was like, whoa, what the fuck? This is okay. Yeah. I'm in, you know, and then
like that sequence is so both like absurd and scary.
Yeah. And it just,
sums up the movie really well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Cause there is this like panicked, you know, it's got the, I don't even know if you can call this a trope, but you know, main characters are being hunted.
Yeah.
By a person or a thing. And so there is, you know, there's a countdown, right? He's coming after you. He's going to get you eventually. So, you know, how do we structure this story? And I think this movie does it extremely well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The script, I think, is brilliant. I mean, maybe that's heavy-handed, but you don't expect a script this good in a movie like this.
No.
Chompy and the Girls is not the kind of movie where you're like, God damn, that script was singing, man.
Yeah. But like, so a good example is like one thing, like one thing they don't do in this movie, like, you know, maybe there's a small bit of it, but reasonably so given again the short kind of, you know, time frame in which it happens, but they like, they don't really like waste much time going like, you know, Jackson, you're crazy, you're just seeing things, you're crazy, you know, how like they always have this like thing where they're disbelieving a certain character,
right?
And you're just that buys them
10 more minutes of screen time or whatever.
Don't waste our time, like just say like, no, there's a person with a big distended jaw, face thing, chest, whatever, like it's happening. This is real, baby. You know what I mean? Like, don't waste our time with this, you know, is she crazy or not or anything like that? And just be like, no, just go.
Well,
go.
I think this movie bypasses that just by the fact of, you know, this is his biological daughter. His wife does not know she exists because he literally just found out she exists. He is trying to pretend she doesn't exist, not that he's crazy, because he knows she's not crazy. They saw the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So when she shows up at his house, it's not a, I don't know what she's talking about. It's a, fuck, how do I deal with this? You know, it becomes another point of conflict, another point of not scares, but tension.
Yeah, for right? sure.
It's like, yeah. What do you do? So you lie to your wife that you have to go and fix something for work. And when you leave, like right after you get home from work, you get a text message from someone saying she's your daughter.
Right.
You lie to your wife to go meet this daughter, which fair, because you don't know.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're saying you're my daughter? Right. Fair enough. Investigate it before you tell the truth. But then he keeps it to himself. Right.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, okay, well, this is another layer of tension that we have to this story. He's not trying to deny what she saw. He's trying to deny she exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that deny Chompy exists, to deny that his daughter exists.
Yeah, it's a good point. And then by having them have like a common experience like right away too, though, then it gives him a reason to kind of, yeah, like for him not to be able to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that immediately cuts out. Oh, so had he been saying, oh, she's crazy, then that would make his character diabolical.
Yeah, exactly.
And right. He's not. And he's not, right? Like, that's not what this movie is. This movie is a man who just found out that he has a daughter and he's scared, right? And it's 100% relatable. 100% relatable, right? Like, that would be, a life change, obviously a life changing thing, but perhaps a life breaking thing, you know, all of a sudden you have a 20-year-old kid show up in your life, and you know, that could be glorious or it could be not glorious. You know what I mean? Like it could be, and also anywhere in between, but he's also going through some marriage problems, and I think in survival mode, he's like, well, I have to save my marriage. And if my wife finds out I have a daughter, it could push her over the edge.
Right.
And that is like 10,000% believable. And it just makes, it makes this story so much better. And it makes the story so much better when Deborah gets more involved in the action, because this movie is sort of set up in different ways. So first of all, they leave Deborah behind. Which in my mind, I was questioning that, right? Like why, like clearly Deborah's involved now, right? Like if Sam's involved, Deborah's involved. But then Sam and Jackson go off to try and, I don't know, beat Chompy.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And end up rescuing a little girl. And, and then, Chompy goes after Deborah.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And then after that, she has to join the crew. And then it's this like four person weird crew of people that don't know each other, which is the funny thing.
Really.
Because Jackson is Sam's daughter and they don't know each other. And, you know, Sam and Deborah are having marriage issues. And clearly these things have, you know, popped up and they've done nothing to, you know, no counseling or anything like that. So they are essentially becoming strangers to each other. And then, of course, they have like an actual stranger, the little girl in the car, as well as Lotus. I keep forgetting about Lotus.
Yeah.
Well, he spends a good portion of the movie either mostly or semi unconscious.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is that. There is that. He roofies him. Well, that's another thing that, like, I was like almost yelling at the TV screen. Like, why did he roofie him? Like, why didn't he take the cup? He witnesses a guy drop a pill in a red Solo cup or whatever.
Yeah.
And instead of running across the room, grabbing the cup out of the woman's hand before she drinks it and dumping it out, he grabs the drink out of the woman's hand and drinks it. And then he doesn't say, this guy roofied you. He just walks away.
No, I don't know if he was out of all his other drugs or what.
Right. Like, I hope that was that guy's only
I think that was the case.
Jesus.
I don't know.
But yeah, yeah, and then of course, Lotus spends the rest of the movie roofied. So, roofied and coming out of being roofied. No, not of roofying himself. Again, he wasn't roofied. He roofied himself. No. Which is exactly what you want your occult expert to do right when you go to get help from them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even remember actually now if he really ends up almost doing anything then. Like in
He spends most of the time in the backseat of the car half passed out. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But in terms of like drawing magic circles and stuff, I don't think he really ends up doing anything.
They talk about it a couple times, but I don't think he draws a magic circle at all.
No. So I guess that'd be too much of an easy, you know, resolution to the movie or something.
If
indeed he can do that. Yes.
Well, maybe that is convenient for the plot, but man, it sure is a wild fucking way to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, like to know, you know, you have like a possible solution kind of with your group, a possible solution to a problem, and then it's like completely impotent or like inaccessible.
Yeah.
The person is just, you know, out of it. So, oh man, but such an odd movie. It's like almost like I know it is called a horror comedy, but I just, like, I don't even know. Like, the only reason why I kind of, I guess, agree with that is because, I mean, I don't really know what else to call it. Like, it is just kind of a gonzo kind of
absurdist horror
or something absurd. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's hard to say. I'm not sure. Is it absurdist or like, it's not, but you're right. Horror comedy doesn't feel right.
No. And yeah.
Yeah, this doesn't feel right. So, like, could it be absurdist horror? I don't, it's not like satire.
No, not really.
I don't
think.
I can't really pick it up on anything there. So it's just this sort of like weird, over the top weirdness, this sort of bizarro nature of it.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the characters are kind of funny at times. And also you got a character who roofies himself to save a woman from being roofied, which is again absurd. But it is one of the things that happen in the real world portion of this movie. By that, I mean, not a supernatural person doing this, but
exactly
a regular human who, I guess, has a couple books about the occult.
Yeah. He's the guy with the tarot deck or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that makes him an expert.
Yeah, I do love the introduction of that character with him just like lounging on the couch, smoking pot with like women all over him or whatever.
Right? Oh yeah,
Like a very like tropey, like let's go to like the drug dealer pimp house, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, fun. And I mean, like this, I think fun is the operative term. Like I was drawn in. I put my phone down. This, like, honestly, I was kind of glad for the Tubi ads because this is so paced. Like, it's another, like it could almost get away from you if you don't have those little ad breaks, you know?
Yeah, actually, it's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it just, like, it gets running and it doesn't stop. And it gets running minutes into the movie.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right. Even like the text message saying I'm your daughter, is enough to get the movie running. And then from there, it's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
There's more to it than that, you know? And it's just, I was just completely entranced by it. And I want to see more from, Sky Braband, Braband, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Braband, I'm not sure.
Actor and, actor, writer, director. What else has he written? So he's written two short films and this film. He's directed one of those short films and this film. And he's acted in his two short films and then a couple other things. So. Yeah, I mean, young filmmaker, this, for a statement for your first film, wow, is my answer to that. Just wow.
Yeah, I hope he carries on. Or, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm sure he can have other good ideas, but I wouldn't mind seeing kind of more movies, Yeah, kind of like in this vein, you know what I mean? Like, obviously not the same, but like just kind of weird. That, yeah, just kind of strange
give me,
movie.
Give me
some
high weirdness, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's nothing really in the realm of alternate titles, although I do want to just say the title in Mexican.
Okay, what would it be?
Chompy y las chicas. Oh, kind of sounds nice. Chompy and Chompy and the girls sounds weird, but Chompy y las chicas sounds kind of nice.
Sounds like a little like mini Mexican wrestler or something. And,
yeah.
He's got like an entourage.
The Mexican version of the Godfather comes out with his hose. Yeah. He comes out with las chicas. Yeah.
Yes.
Man, I can't put this on my favorite movie of the year list because it came out in 2021. But man, you guys should really check this out. And it's free on Tubi. And I can see no reason why I shouldn't give this a 5 out of 5. That's no shade one. If you don't, but man, I am into this movie.
I'm going to go 4.5. That's all.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's fair.
It's very high though. Yeah. It's, it's one of those things where just afterwards I'm like, I don't really have any, you know, any, I don't know. I just can't see really any faults, you know, like it's just great at what it is, like at what it wants to be, at what it tried to be, it seems. And it just seems to have cared, like pulled it off. So,
yeah. I mean, look, like not many 90-minute movies can, you know, mix in like intense interpersonal human drama, high weirdness, and also end up sort of creating their own monster mythology out of it, you know, like, yeah. The Chompy and the Girls could be, you know, there could be a Chompy and the Girls too, or a Chompy and something else, you know, follow up, you know, Chompy and the Sasquatch or some shit. I don't know. But yeah, it's just unique. And I love things that are unique. And this will be my favorite bizarro horror film, at least until they finally release, Every Time I Eat Ice Cream, My Whole Fucking Face Explodes. Is that the name of that title? I can't remember.
Maybe.
There is a Carlton Mellick adaptation. Every Time Ice Cream, My Fucking Face Explodes. Every time we meet for ice cream, Your Whole Fucking Face Explodes is the name of the movie. Oh, it's 7 minutes long. See, I didn't know that. I could probably find that on YouTube then.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to. Okay. Crazy. Yeah. Well, there's your double feature. I guess a song, right?
Yeah.
Should probably get out of here with a song. And, I mean... I got nothing with Chompy in it. But I do have a new record from the abrasive metalcore band 16. And they have a song that kind of reminds me of Jackson in this movie. And it is called Desperation Angel by 16. Thanks, Dwayne.
No problem.
Light, Weapons. So Weapons is written and directed by Zach Cregger. He of Barbarian fame. And also he was one of the whitest kids you know as well, which I didn't quite realize until my friend Patrick told me that. So there you go. Weapons, if you don't know, centers around a small town where a class of, I would say, like, what are they? Did they say that they're, like, 10? So what's that, like, grade 5? Yeah, like a grade 5 class of 17 children go missing. Only one child in the class does not, and the teacher does not, but she walks in the next day to one student in her class. Turns out all of the children, as they were caught on Ring doorbell cameras, woke up and left their houses at 2:17 a.m., running out into the night, never to be seen again. Things start to boil over in the town. The teacher of said students is played by Julia Garner, who I have become an incredibly huge fan of since I watched Ozark, and she was also great in she was in Martha Marcy May Marlene as well, but that's not what I was thinking. She was also in Wolfman, which is also not what I was thinking. Because I didn't quite like that one very much, but she was in that one about the girl. You know what I mean. God damn it. God, how long ago was that? Oh, there it is. I skipped it. Inventing Anna, which was a great, I think it was a Netflix limited series where she plays that con woman. So anyway, so she comes under scrutiny. People refer to her as a witch. They deface her car with the word witch in particular. Her principal, played by the always great Benedict Wong. So Julia Garner, great. Benedict Wong, great. You know, he's telling her to stay home. Her presence at the school is not necessarily wanted, especially by the community. And so she sort of locks herself at home and kind of drinking her woes away. She has a very incensed father, played by Josh Brolin, understandably mad. Where is his son? You know, he hates her and is sort of stalking her as well. And, well, the mystery unfolds as to what has been happening in this town. Where are the children? What is going on? Does the teacher have anything to do with it? Does Alex, the one kid remaining from the class, have anything to do with it? Well, you'll have to watch the film to figure that out. But I think this movie is a very, very well-made mystery thriller that has an incredibly cool premise. It's also got some wild tonal shifts that actually really, really work. And in fact, I think that's kind of the thing that turned people off of Barbarian a little bit, the sort of absurd mixed with the very intense. And I think, even though I really, really enjoyed Barbarian, I think Weapons does it better. It switches on a dime, and I found myself sort of like smiling and then going, oh, you know, like knowing what's coming. I thought that was really incredibly well handled. I love the premise. It's got sort of a Bentley Little vibe to it. And you know how I like that sort of absurdist, almost extreme horror. It's brutally violent at times. It's told in a very compelling way. We get we sort of get each person's story, as we unfold the entire plot of the film. Each person, I haven't mentioned Alden Ehrenreich, who plays Paul. He's a police officer. There's James, who is a drug addict and a thief, in town. There's June Diane Raphael, Well, I'm not going to spoil who she is. She's responsible for one of those crazy, wild, absurdist tonal moments, in the liquor store or the gas station selling liquor or whatever, which I think the crowd that we watched it with really enjoyed. Also the always incredible Amy Madigan, perfect performance there. Again, I'll say no more, but if you're thinking of sitting this one out, I think it's a bad idea. I think Weapons is perhaps the best horror film of the year. Is it the best film of the year? Maybe. I think it's probably sitting at number one on my list right now. So, yeah. Here we go. That was entirely spoiler-free. Is there anything else I can say? I think it's beautifully shot. I feel like it doesn't linger on non-essential story elements. I think first watching it, I was sort of like, man, they didn't really drag out the mystery very much. But I think perhaps that's kind of a satisfying part of the film, because it doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not Prisoners, for example, but it's not necessarily the mystery that's the coolest part of the film. The coolest part of this film, and it does what so many of these modern horror films with great premises, hell, even Wolfman, you know, they have a good setup, but they just don't go there, you know, and that's where I think Weapons has them beat, because Weapons goes there. The final 15 minutes of Weapons boosts this film that I already enjoyed into a film that I'm going to give a 5 out of 5. I absolutely adored it. It's got an absolutely bug fuck nuts last 15 minutes, maybe even just last 10 minutes. 15 too. It's absolutely great. Brolin's great. Garner's great. Wong is great. Ehrenreich is great. Madigan is great. Everybody's great in this movie. Don't miss out. Check it out. See it in a theater if you can. I don't know when it's coming. You know, it'll eventually come to streaming at some place. But yeah, Weapons, rules. We're going to get out of here with some more like downbeat music here. We're going to do a little bit of downbeat music before I come back and say goodbye. And we're going to leave with some Ulver from their sort of moody gothy record. What is it? Servant of the Sun? Shadows of the Sun by Ulver. The song is called Let the Children Go.
the sun sets, the time to sleep without dreams. We have nothing.
And that is us, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did putting it together for you. And if you did, you can let me know, dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com, dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. I'm on all the things at dreadmedia on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky. There's a Facebook group called Dread Media. Patreon.com/dreadmedia is where you can support the show. And also just send your good vibes in general my way in hopes that we don't have to evacuate, or if we do, it's just a precaution. So, yeah, I guess that's it. Let's get out of here. Really impressed with the Nine Inch Nails show the other night. Trent and crew are killing it. This is the first time I've seen Nine Inch Nails with Josh Freese. Oh, no. Actually, I think he played in Nine Inch Nails when he also played in A Perfect Circle. Is that true? Did he do double duty that night I saw them? Maybe. Okay, but this is the first time I've seen Nine Inch Nails with Atticus Ross, a genuine Grammy and Oscar winner in the band. So that's kind of fun. And yeah, it was really cool. We got some different interpretations of their music. We got some straight up, straight from the record bangers. And we got this version. They've been playing this version of one of my favorite Nine Inch Nails song, Piggy. They're playing the version from Further Down the Spiral, the remix record, which is remixed by Rick Rubin and has guitar by Dave Navarro. They played this version of Piggy, which is titled Piggy, Nothing Can Stop Me Now. You guys take care of yourselves, take care of others, fuck wildfires, and we'll see you, hopefully, next week.
Hey, baby. Yeah, you. Hey, big, 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 big.